Dissolution by Stefan Molyneux, freedomain.com. Chapter 14.
The sobs felt like they would never end.
Justin's innards were like an epileptic balloon animal, twisting and rolling and leaking salty sorrow. He lay on his side, feeling like the floor was tilting and rising towards the icy stars beyond the blue. Disaster spilled from his mind. His father had to save penguins from a burning zoo. His mother was trying to save her eyes as she mouth-breathed life back into a narwhal. Criminals teemed through the city, striking and stealing, and his parents had to summon their fellow crime fighters to take them on in some desperate last stand. "Why leave me if nothing is happening?" Justin's brain cried out, screamed out, while the more practical, colder part of his soul saw his mother and father sipping their infinite coffees behind the wheel of their giant gray car, phones scrolling and laughing as they drove over rainbow bridges under showers of gold and gems.
They're having fun while I..."
And with all the mighty rage of his compact frame, Justin railed against his abandonment. The burnt lady reached out with her arms, a rigid smile coating her yellow teeth. Justin took a deep shuddering breath and squeezed his eyes shut. The feeling floated beneath his words.
"If I empty myself of tears, I will be fine all over again."
"Justine,"
said the burnt, spicy voice. The voice was syrup, the eyes caustic.
"Come, let us play with the Lego."
A hand closed on his wrist. All at once, Justin felt the fight go out of him. The will of the woman entered him and became his physics. No plea would reach her. No tears would erode her destination. It was like trying to flap your arms if you fell off a slide. The concrete still met you with metallic, mouthy blood. Being half pulled down the hallway, Justin saw a white blonde little girl hiding under a paint-spattered craft table. Eyes wide, she raised her forefinger to her lips. Justin looked away as if he could buy 10 seconds more safety by refusing to daisy chain any downward glances from the burnt woman. They passed by the baby room, where two obese women chatted while chunky babies rolled around on the stained floor. One woman was holding a soggy, saggy diaper. The other was pointing at something on her phone. The burnt woman brought Justin to the bright green door, the cold metal peeking through the ripped wounds of flaking paint. Justin wanted to touch the metal to see if it was a different temperature, different texture, but the burnt woman snatched his hand away. The cacophony flashed onto his face as the green door opened. Justin could see and evaluate with all the flashing instincts of any prey species the boiling battles being constantly waged between the builders and the breakers. The builders were trying to make houses and bridges out of blocks, while the breakers were constantly knocking them down. The builders were trying to play snakes and ladders or push broken little three-wheeled cars down the remains of tattered town road carpets, while the breakers ran over, across, and through everything that could be assembled to even marginally extend the attention span. The children, only ever picked up by one parent, fought to bring their chaos to the two-parent kids. The kids new to daycare quailed back before the lifers who taught them the ropes by choking them in small corners.
"Are you hungry, Justine?" asked the burnt woman.
Justin shook his head. He never had any appetite at daycare. Everything was covered in mucus, and he could not spend his whole eternity washing his hands, no matter how many times his parents got angry at him for bringing another bug home. His dad would sniffle and tower over him and get angry because he had to go to court, and how was he supposed to win if he was dripping snot everywhere? And why didn't his pretty mommy want to stay home, since it cost so much for daycare? But she really, really wanted to work for the man at the suit factory, which always meant superhero costumes to Justin, so maybe that was understandable. Kids breathed and bubbled snot and mucus. And phone calls were apparently made to parents because being sick meant the kids had to stay home. But that never worked for Justin. He could be bleeding from both eyes, it seemed, and that just meant dropping him off in sunglasses and then his mother later yelling that he must have got it from some kid at daycare that very day. And there were the sugar-free kids who had occasional cakes made from watermelon, but that was about it. And all the sugared kids were always trying to get them to eat candy and cookie crumbs. And there were the reader kids. Justin felt most sorry for them sometimes, who were just trying to get to the end of a story before the book was ripped out of their hands or some breaker kid would tear out the last page and sell it back to them for a cookie or a piece of candy. And Justin had a friend who felt more like a sympathetic refugee or cellmate. Ralph, the pale boy who liked to tell endless stories with lots of farting, and who would walk the perimeter of the playground during lunch or outdoor time with Justin and talk about dinosaurs and trains and airplanes and war and the hope that he would get to fight a real dragon someday, maybe on another planet, he said in a rare concession to prosaic reality. And Justin would talk of the island he would build when he was older. An island where he would breed lizards and big cats and hunt for fish with a spear because hooks were kind of sissy and build his own hut because houses were also sissy and name every shape on the moon all for himself and learn to live without any ships bringing him anything but that Ralph could totally come and visit and stay if he liked and where there would be nothing brightly colored except fruit and fish and no burnt woman or jigsaw puzzles with missing pieces or toy cars with broken springs, and the hard, hot rain would wash all germs free from everything, and the days would be spent exploring and lazing on sunny rocks that put you to sleep with their warmth. And Justin and Ralph would be called in and lectured at for being antisocial. Afterwards, Ralph would talk about his aunt, who had never married, and actually knew magic tricks, and gave both boys hope that a female might actually one day be welcome on their island and provide some benefit other than food and shelter and nagging. And the really dumb kids sat sagging under the monkey bars, staring listlessly and rousing themselves only for the occasional offered cup of water. And Justin tried to remember the color and location of the cups, like watching a magician, because he was okay catching colds and sore throats, but was terrified of catching dumbness and spending the rest of his life being nothing and staring into nothing. And the lonely kids would latch on to Justin because he was good-looking and sort of kind, but they brought out a special demon in Justin's chest because they were germs worse than anything except dumbness, because they stuck to him, droning on about their Japanese cards and Lego sets and Caterpillar books and never asking him anything. Just endless monotone drivel about things he neither understood nor cared about. And their strange whispered superiority, their creepy invitations to join a club he would surrender a bloody pinky to stay out of, and boasting about faraway parents who obviously didn't like them either. And the days were endless. The noise and chaos and barely restrained yelling of the adults created violent static in Justin's mind. And incomprehension that he should suffer and fear so much and yet have his suffering and fear remain so invisible to his parents and his stone-faced granddad and chatty, leaky grandmom and everyone else. It was like being lowered into a trashy underworld every day and writhing and dodging and trying to paint only to have glass jars of murky water splashed onto his medieval scenes. And then kids eating glue and pinching hard under the table. And then occasional flashes of grace and civility, like when the good-looking guitar man came and sang Raffy songs and all the women smiled and shone and patted their hair and spoke softly for once. And the cries of shock and sorrow floating down the hall from the baby room, and the chaos and sadness of pick-up time, when children burst into tears as their parents reappeared, and the terror of the children whose parents came late, wondering if they would come at all. And when his mother came to pick him up, she never asked what he had made that day, at least after the first few times, because he said it had all been broken or wetted or destroyed in some stupid way or another. And she would compress her red lips and not want to hear any more about his day. Occasionally she would chat with the burnt woman, smiling and shaking her head knowingly. But that was to show Justin that they were friends, which meant that the burnt woman could tell tales on Justin, and that would be bad. And it was not warmer on the way home in the car. He was not closer to another human soul. But it was quieter, because his mother often had a headache and didn't want to listen. She talked, sometimes, about things that were scary, not because he understood them, but because his mother didn't understand that he didn't understand them. All he knew was that his father would ruffle his hair and read his phone over dinner, and then, after a solitary bath, Justin would nestle in the crook of his father's arm and listen to his favorite story before blending their flesh together in gentle sleep. And in his dreams, Justin was alone on his island, exploring his closed orange eyelids under the silent white sun. Because colors and people and peers were just overwhelming. Since Justin was flooded with endless violent noise, only at night, in a solitary world of distance and unreality, could he even feel the possibility of peace.